You're listening to Workplace Perspective, an employment law podcast presented by Sapphire Legal. Workplace Perspective is a regular podcast series for employers and employees focusing on education, training, and the law to help organizations of all sizes develop and maintain successful workplace relationships. The opinions expressed by guests on Workplace Perspective do not necessarily reflect those of Sapphire Legal or its attorneys and should not be considered legal advice. And now, here's your host, founder and principal attorney at Sapphire Legal, Teresa McQueen.
Thank you, James, and welcome everyone to Workplace Perspective, where we are striving to raise the bar at workplaces everywhere. Today, we're talking with Rob Wilson, president of EmployCo USA. We'll be talking with Rob about his thoughts on the true cost of providing paid paternity leave. Rob's thoughts are inspired by a report that was put out by a team of international researchers who looked at the effects of paid paternity leave policies at companies in, of all places, Denmark. Denmark, because that's a country that mandates time off for new parents. I'm super excited to hear his thoughts and insights into this important issue. It's going to be a great show. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The opinions expressed by guests on Workplace Perspective do not necessarily reflect those of Sapphire Legal or its attorneys and should not be considered legal advice. You're listening to Workplace Perspective, an employment law podcast presented by Sapphire Legal.
Welcome back to our listeners and welcome to Workplace Perspective, Rob Wilson.
Thanks for having me today.
We're really excited. But before we get started, why don't you tell our listeners a bit about you and what you do?
Sure. I am one of the founders of EmployCo USA. We're an HR outsourcing firm, so we provide HR solutions to businesses, several hundred businesses across the entire country, helping them navigate and outsource their HR, help them buy benefits and volume, and overall guidance on the HR front.
All right. So for our subject today, I want to do a little bit of a backstory here. So California, we're talking about paternity leave today, of course, and California is very protective of its employees, and it does provide leave for new parents under various state and federal acts. So we have, on the federal level, of course, FMLA, which gives 12 weeks unpaid leave to employers of 50 or more employees. We have the California Family Rights Act on the state level, which mirrors, for the most part, FMLA, and again provides 12 weeks unpaid leave. Protected leave for employers of 50 or more. We also have in California the new Parent Leave Act, which applies to smaller employers. So those employers with 20 or more employees, so 20 to 49 employees, also provide 12 weeks of unpaid leave. Then new parents can. Now those are all unpaid protected leaves. But now, new parents, if they meet stated criteria, can get financial relief under our state's Employment Development Department's paid family leave. If they qualify, financial benefits can be provided up to at least, I think it's 6 weeks in a 12-month period. But California, as always, is an anomaly. We know this. So, Rob, let's talk about what's happening in other parts of the country. And I want to start out by asking you sort of, what are the statistics telling us about the need for paternity leave in particular?
Sure, and you know, back to California for 1 second. So California, on the new benefit, you know, they're paying it's being paid for by a payroll tax. So everyone's paying a 1% payroll tax to the state to get up to those six weeks of benefits. But so. As far as some statistics, so 92 countries offer paid paternity leave, and the U.S. is one that does not. We've got 9% of our work sites, and that's not employers, but kind of work sites offer paid paternity option, which equates to 80% of Americans do not have a paid paternity leave option. So 76% of dads are back to work within 1 week, which found interesting. I was one of those three times, as I've got three kids, and within a week I was back at my desk working. And on the women's side, 1 in 4 women return to work within 10 days of giving birth. So I think there's still a stigma of dads taking time off.
And we're talking, you're making the distinction in the thoughts that you're going to give today, right? We're distinguishing between leave, unpaid leave, whether it's protected or not, and paid leave, right?
Right, so correct. So 9% of work sites have paid paternity leave, so 80% do not have any paid leave.
Wow.
So, correct.
Wow, interesting.
So, and so paid leave or not, surprisingly, when you look at dads, there's 76% are back at work within 1 week. But in the states that have paid leave, there's a pretty high percentage of dads that don't take it because they feel the stigma that I shouldn't take it.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. So, you know, how much of that is the fact that, I guess the question would be, so let's say it was a particular amount of time, because I know locally from my clients, and we've got friends, that the guys that we know don't typically take all that they're entitled to. And I wonder what the reasons for that are. Is it all, would they actually take it, the full time, if it was provided in California? I don't know that we're seeing that. I don't have any statistics. But I wonder how much of that is, right, stigma. It's this idea that women take paternity. Men don't need to. So I'll take a couple days off and, you know, help around the house or do whatever and bond a little bit, and then I'm going back to work. Do they feel that because that's what they want to do, or because they feel that's what's culturally expected?
I think it's more of a cultural and a workplace. Men haven't been allowed to have paternity time for so long that, you know, from a paid standpoint, you might use that week of vacation. But and there's in the large companies that do offer paid, it varies. There's some as low as a couple of weeks to someone like Netflix. They offer unlimited paid during the first year. But there's really, because being a corporation, we don't have statistics of how many of those dads took time or how much did they take.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know that too. I'd also be interested to know generationally. So we talk a lot on this show about the future workforce, and I would love to see, you know, what statistics are with regard to the younger generation, because I was just at a retreat and with several of the younger guys in the room were talking about how looking forward they were to starting families and to being fathers and to having that experience. And I just wonder if the younger generations are going to change that dynamic and change that culture in the workplace to where it's more embracing, it's more supportive culturally. Because laws are one thing and policies are one thing, but if the culture doesn't support it, it doesn't really matter, which is kind of what I think kind of what you're saying a little bit. But it would really be interesting to know generationally if that's going to change. I have such hope for the future.
Right, exactly. And one of the comments in the study was that part of the goal with the paid paternity was to get the dads more involved in a baby or child's life at an earlier age, more involved. So that was one of the goals, but yet to see what effect it has.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's such a wonderful concept, and I really don't think it should be gender specific. But let's talk a little bit about more down to sort of the nuts and bolts of it. What do you think that you think that if I understand correctly, we were preparing for this show, this idea was that a lot of businesses have this misconception that providing paternity leave in particular is going to have some impact on the bottom line. Mike, have I got your idea right?
Right, correct. Yeah, and that's what the study found, is that that study actually found that the paid leave had no demonstrable negative impact on a company's bottom line. But if you look at the perception, if you go back to, you know, most small businesses, they don't offer it because they think they can't afford it, afford to pay for leave.
Right.
Many of the small businesses, they don't pay for maternity leave, let alone paternity. So, you know, their thought is, hey, if we're not paying for the women to be off, how can we afford to pay for the men? You know, after the affordability part of it, as a business, then their next thought is, well, if they're off, it's bad enough that I'm giving somebody sick time and vacation time, but if I have to throw in paternity time, who's going to do the work? If I've got to bring a temp in, and how good are? So there's a lot of those questions, but
I always call that the leave too far. Right. It's like I have this and this, and that one is just this next one. Man, that's just a leave too far. I can't go there. I don't know what the deal is.
And what they should be looking at is they should be looking at your employee engagement, your employee retention. So I would beg to differ with, look at the cost. Will somebody be more productive knowing they're going to be taking a paternity leave off, as well as from a retention standpoint? Unemployment's at 3.5% across the country as a nation. If you can retain your employees, and this is a great way to retain your employees.
Yeah, I agree. So tell me then, what's the good news? What's the research showing that contradicts this belief that employers have that it's, or are those all the concerns that you're hearing from employers? Let's make sure that's the fact. So you're talking about affordability. Yeah. You know, it's one too many leaves that we have to provide. I'm not going there. Is there anything else that employers are sort of have in their minds as to why they think this would impact the bottom line?
No, they're typically saying that I can't afford it. I can't afford it, one, financially. Two, I can't afford it from a workplace standpoint, having people take that extra time off.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a company over 50 employees, you've got FMLA. But if someone's their thought is if someone's taking that time off, I'm not paying them. So it doesn't cost me anything. On the reverse side, though, the study showing that it doesn't impact your bottom line. And when we look at that employee retention, there's a lot of good news from the research that you should do it.
So tell me the good news. I want to hear good news.
what you're seeing is from the survey and some other research that your better retention. People are your best employees are being headhunted, and if you don't think they are, you're fooling yourself, because there's other recruiters out there trying to take your employees because employment is so tight right now. So the better benefits and the better workplace you can become, the more retention you're going to have. So this is a great way to, if you look at statistically across your workplace, how many you can offer this plan and how many people are really going to take it? How many dads are there in your workplace? If you look around at your employees, look at that number, and if they do take it, are they going to take the whole amount? The benefit side is people are going to look when they come to work for your business that, I can't get this at 80% of the other companies. This is a great opportunity for me to work for somebody and get that benefit.
Yeah, it's a great way to distinguish yourself from a business perspective. I do think that. I would hate to think that people would offer it with the anticipation that, well, we're going to offer this, but we know that statistics show we're only doing it because very few of them use it all. But I would think that a genuine effort to incorporate this into a culture is going to be a really awesome thing. We are going to take a quick break right now. It's a good place to do it. And when we come back, we're going to hear more of Rob's thoughts on the true impact of providing paternity leave. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals, but I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
Don't miss Workplace Perspective, the only show giving you both the employer and the employee workplace perspectives, with me, your host, Teresa McQueen, every Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. Welcome back, everyone. Before we jump back into our show, we wanted to take a few minutes to touch on something that's impacting workplaces across the nation and in other countries as well. And because it has employer and employee aspects to it, we kind of wanted to weigh in. We know it's on everybody's mind, and that's the coronavirus, COVID-19. So it was first detected, of course, in China and now in more than 100 locations internationally, including the United States. As of today, September 11th, 2020 is our show date today, the World Health Organization has characterized COVID-19 as a pandemic. Now, that is a worldwide designation, not a United States designation or a state designation that has yet to be decided. But we think, I think it's important to point out that's a really important distinction because once it is designated as a pandemic, and where it is designated as a pandemic is important because it provides a governmental confirmation that the illness poses what would be determined to be a direct threat to the safety and welfare of workers. It's this direct threat designation that in turn is going to impact how employers deal with modifying further than they already probably are, existing workplace policies and implementing additional temporary policies to address pandemic-specific concerns. And, of course, with so much news coverage, it's really easy to get overwhelmed and be ill-informed. And I just wanted to sort of let you know what I'm encouraging my clients and their employees, which is to look to trusted sources such as the CDC, the World Health Organization, as well as state and local public health organizations. So we're going to run through a quick list of what can employers do and what can employees do, and then we're going to jump back into our show. So for employers, you want to make sure, again, you're looking to credible organizations. I just heard something on the an NPR report the other day that said, with all this disinformation going around, employees are actually trusting and looking to their employers to provide credible information. So you want to make sure you're honoring that trust by in turn relying on trusted sources such as the CDC, the WHO, you can rely on the California Department of Public Health, California Labor Commission, our California Employment Development Department, Cal OSHA, EEOC, our Department of Industrial Relations. Those are all have lots of good, credible information. Look at reviewing your company paid policy, sick paid leave policies, as well as your federal and state leave policies. Know what they are, know what they require. And consider, of course, temporary measures that are going to encourage employees to take the sick time that they need. This could include gifting additional days into their leave banks or allowing employees to go into the negative within their leave banks. You might want to consider, of course, remote work options if you can, even if it's on a temporary basis. You can make sure that you are alerting everyone that, hey, this is a temporary situation based on this critical health issue we have going on. You want to encourage and provide, of course, training on hygiene measures, cough and sneeze etiquette, washing hands. Do advanced planning if you're a business, right? Make sure you've got redundancies in place, that you've got quick communication lines that you can communicate easily with upper management, middle management, as well as your employees. You have contingency planning. What's going to happen if all your payroll people show up sick? Or do you have enough IT resources to make sure that if you're requiring people to do Zoom meetings or remote into meetings, do you have enough bandwidth IT-wise to make that happen? Our employees, what can our employees do? Hey, employees, practice enhanced hygiene, right? Good hand washing, sneeze protocols, stay at home if you're sick or experiencing flu-like symptoms, fever, cough, other respiratory problems that are not allergy related. You also want to look to reliable sources, your employers and some of the agencies that we've referenced. Understand your existing pay policies as well. Don't be afraid to ask your employer for flexibility if you're experiencing flu-like symptoms or you're in a high-risk group because of health or age. You also want to remember that you do not have to disclose any particular medical conditions to an employer, even in this heightened status that we're in, but you can ask if medically necessary for a reasonable accommodation for any certifiable health risk. You want to tell your employer what you need and suggest how they can provide it to you. We know that an entire show could be dedicated to this issue, and it's not our intention, of course, to add to the noise surrounding the issue, but just to provide a few tips that might assist both our employer and employee listeners. So thank you for listening to our break, and now we're going to go back to our show. All right, Rob, how does the future look when it comes to the nationwide view of providing paternity leave?
So I think the future looks and it is better and better. The U.S. Senate passed.
I like to hear that.
The U.S. Senate passed a bill that's going to offer paid paternity for up to 12 weeks for civilian employees of the government, and that would affect roughly 2 million people. So expect that to happen.
And you probably know this, but that's a great bellwether, because I know at least, you know, statistically in California, a lot of things that start out relating to government employees only very, very quickly within, you know, a reasonable amount of time tend to trickle into the public sector. So that is a great bellwether.
Right, exactly. And so that's that they would be required to pay. So that's 2 million people. And then when you look at there's several other states, you know, New York, California, you mentioned, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Washington, D.C. They're all offering paid paternity leave. And some of them vary from 4 weeks to 6 weeks to 8 weeks. So it is being more and more states, and I think you're going to see more states that's going to pop up too. So that's a good move. And then there's more and more large corporations are jumping on it as well. So that's going to help fuel it as well. When you look at companies like, you know, Starbucks is offering 6 weeks of paid leave, and General Mills is doing 12 weeks for dads, 18 to 20 for moms. Lowe's, which is a huge corporation, dads get 2 weeks. So it's starting to spread. So it's just there's been a lot of advocates. There's a lot of people wanting it to happen. So it's finally starting to move forward.
I think that's really terrific, and I really love the idea that it's almost grassroots in its efforts, you know, with so many businesses voluntarily offering it to enhance their own bottom line, right? So worried about impacting their bottom line. It sounds like these organizations have already figured out that, hey, this is going to increase our bottom line because we're going to be able to retain, we're going to be able to recruit. So I think that's fabulous. I love that idea. From your perspective, you've kind of been looking into this issue. If employees themselves wanted to try to advocate for this at their own organizations, do you have any thoughts for them or some practical things that they could do to sort of lead that charge if they were so inclined?
Sure. Your elected officials, both on the state and the federal. The federal have the bill that the Senate approved, but on the state level, contact your local your House or State Senate members, and they actually listen to when you call. There's two good organizations that are big advocates. One is PaidLeave.us. So PaidLeave.us. So they're big advocates for this, as well as NationalPartnership.org. So they're a couple organizations that. You can support, not monetarily, but just be a voice and be somebody that you know, another person that they can say, well, I've got X number of people that are advocating for this.
I think that's great. And then, of course, you know, people can always take a line in their organization by talking to top management, going through HR, being part of advocacy groups. I think that's important, too. As we wrap up today, do you have some words of wisdom or thoughts for the future? You've given us some great information. I don't know if there's much more you can give us.
Sure. No. One of the an interesting thing when we look at studies, you know, that was a great study that has helped fuel the conversation. There's another study in Spain that showed a few years after they passed their paid paternity leave, men's interest in having a second or third child actually after being home went down, and women's interest in larger families increased. So it's interesting fact.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. That's great.
So the dads are home for a couple of weeks and like, I can't take this.
Should advocate paternity leave for birth control. I love it. right, Rob. Well, everyone, that's our show for today. Thank you, Rob, so much for joining us and for sharing your thoughts and your expertise with our listeners. We'll be sure to have the resources that we've talked about during the show up on our website. If you want to learn more about Rob or EmployCo USA, you can find them on the web at www.employco.com. That's EMPLOYCO.com. You can also connect with Rob via our website at sapphirelegal.com/podcast. I want to also thank our listeners, My Radio Angels, James and the Knave at Night, and Workplace Perspectives team extraordinaire, our engineer and producer, Paul Roberts, our associate producer, Melissa DeLacy, with music provided by the very talented Stephen Versaloni. Thank you all so much for joining us on Workplace Perspective, and until next time, keep raising the bar.